I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE, as if like a sick joke. Today is the United Nations International Day of Conscience, coming after an onslaught in Gaza by US, EU, UK-backed Israel during the Holy Week of Eid. Palestinians surviving the bombing are now being starved to death. Today, we'll also see mass protests in Washington, D.C., as the anti-war answer coalition does the only thing it can in the face of an Israeli lobby that has long captured Trump, Vance, Rubio, Hegseth and Waltz, now doing exactly the same thing that Obama and genocide Joe Biden did. Meanwhile, when it comes to information about the Holocaust, a U.S. Brown University paper has just revealed that Israel has now killed more journalists in Palestine than the U.S. Civil War, World Wars I and II, the U.S. wars on Korea, Vietnam, Cambodia and Laos, the NATO war in Yugoslavia and Afghanistan, and the proxy war in Russia through Ukraine combined. Joining me now from Ramallah in Palestine is a doctor and politician who has been wounded multiple times by US, EU, UK armed Israeli gunfire. Dr. Mustafa Barghouti is a member of Palestine's Legislative Council and General Secretary and co-founder of the Palestinian National Initiative. Dr. Barghouti, thank you so much for coming back on. It's been another terrible week after the tens of thousands of children killed by Anglo-American European armed enforcement of the Israeli siege. Starvation, just what's the scale of starvation, hunger in Palestine right now?
The scale is absolutely horrifying because we are talking about more than 36 days of complete and total siege on Gaza. We are talking about deprivation of people from anything. Not a single glass of water, not a single piece of bread, not a single dose of medications allowed to go into Gaza. Not to talk about fuel and electricity, etc., etc. We are talking about true hunger that is now spreading all over Gaza, starvation, and this is all of that is happening in front of the whole world, who cannot say that they didn't know. On top of that, while people are starving and besieged of any access to humanitarian support, Israel is bombarding Gaza around the clock by artillery bombardment, which, as you know, can be totally fatal because it's not that accurate, and by Israeli airstrikes, who don't differentiate between anybody as civilians or any non-civilians. We are talking about more than 1,000 people who have been killed in the course of last week. But in total, we are talking about more than 17,000 children, 51,000 Palestinians in general, mostly civilians who were killed, 115,000 people injured. I think the scale of bombardment is just beyond description. If you take into consideration that Israel has thrown on Gaza no less than 90,000 tons of American explosives during the course of this war, which is about 40 kilograms of explosives for each man, woman, and child. This is absolutely horrible. And as our medical teams have to deal not only with the bombardment and the injuries that cannot be treated because hospitals lack everything due to the siege, but on top of that, we are dealing with biological warfare because the absence of clean water, the absence of food, is leading to the spread of many infections, including more than 112,000 cases of infectious hepatitis. Add to that the fact that the Ministry of Health has complained that Israel is not allowing vaccines to get into Gaza, which means the very high risk of an outbreak of poliomyelitis, a disease that we have eradicated decades ago. Why? Because we don't get the vaccines to give to people. So atrocity after atrocity, and no justification for all of that, because the real goal of this destruction is, as we see, is the displacement of most of the Palestinians and then concentrating them in one concentration camp. It seems that that's what the Israelis are preparing in Rafah. Imagine 2.1 million people clustered in a small concentration camp under Israeli control, and then trying to deport them out of Gaza.
Yeah, it's difficult to imagine what it was like after the initial Trump-organized ceasefire, the brief ceasefire. I know it was broken sometimes, but there was a cessation of aerial bombardment of Gaza for those days after Trump was inaugurated. Then again it starts up, and now, I mean, something that some people say is a good thing, actually, we have explicitly the intention of complete ethnic cleansing. So is there a mood there that all the Palestinians besieged in Gaza, let alone the ones being killed in the West Bank, realize that they're, unless something happens now, they are all going to die? It's going to be a mass genocide of everyone.
Yes, there is a very strong feeling of anger, because really what we are subjected to is three combined war crimes in parallel. Genocide, which is happening, collective punishment, including starving people, and the act of ethnic cleansing. And this is also happening in the West Bank, by the way, where more than 45,000 people have already been ethnically cleansed from the refugee camps they live in. And let me remind you that these refugees are there because Israel displaced them from their towns and villages back in 1948. So they displace people, they become refugees, then they come after them in their refugee camps. It's most horrifying. And at the same time, I must say that there is no justification for that. Israel knows very well that the first ceasefire could have been prolonged and extended because the Palestinians were ready to hand over all the Israeli prisoners in exchange of releasing some of the Palestinian prisoners, who nobody talks about them, by the way. We're talking about 15,000 Palestinian prisoners, who many of whom were kidnapped, many of whom are children, and who are tortured around the clock.
While Palestinian officials like you obviously do care about the Palestinian prisoners, is it clear to you that Netanyahu doesn't care at all about the Jewish prisoners taken on October the 7th?
He does not, because he knows very well that with each bombardment he conducts in Gaza, these prisoners could die. The Israeli prisoners will die. And about 40 of them died because of Israeli bombardment before. So he knows very well, and maybe he hopes that they will all be killed, because for him, they are just an additional burden to his plans. This man is not just extremist, is not just extreme Zionist. He is a fascist, and his government is a government of fascists. What we see now in Palestine never happened except by the fascists, by the Nazi Germany at one point of time. And ironically, that's what was done to Jewish people by the Nazi regime. And now they are doing to us the same thing. That is totally unacceptable. And nobody should accept that. Nobody should accept fascism and its behavior.
My only surprise there, though, is that, and we have the historical record of collaboration between the real Nazis in Germany and the setting up of Israel. Why this is surprising to Palestinian officials? Because this was always the plan, wasn't it? I mean, we know the failure of Oslo and so on, but this was always the plan, and it's now just come to a head, and now they're going to wipe you all out. Isn't that what I don't understand is why this was surprising and why there was no real ability to organize amongst Palestinians?
Well, we're not surprised. You know, I personally wrote so many articles and books even criticizing Oslo Agreement and telling the Palestinian official leadership that they have made a mistake by believing the Israeli side, and that we will end up with what we have today. I am sure they will not be able to wipe us out. Mainly because we are so determined to stay, and so determined to stay in our country, and they will have to encounter unbelievable resistance to their plans. But what surprises me is not that Oslo didn't work. I knew that. I knew it was going to fail, and we opposed it from the very beginning. Actually, that was the reason why we formed the Palestinian National Initiative, people like me and Edward Said and Haider Abdeshafi and others, because we all opposed Oslo, knowing what will happen. But what surprised me, really, is maybe because I was naive and believed the Western governments and Western countries when they were talking to us all these last 50 years about human rights, about democracy, about international law, claiming that they are better than other countries because they are democratic and they care about international law. And now look at their behavior, as if nothing is happening. In my opinion, the growth of fascism is not limited to Israel. It is actually extending to many Western governments and Western countries.
Yeah, we're going to speak to Edward Said's friend Tariq Ali on Monday's show, actually. And I want to talk to you about what you think of the media coverage in these NATO countries that are arming the genocide.
You know what is really shocking is not just that the crimes are happening and that these governments are silent about it. What is really shocking is that they are trying to silence any voice that supports Palestinian human rights. They try to silence us, and they try to silence people who support us. They try to silence even Jewish voices in the United States of America who are against Israeli policy and who support the Palestinian rights. This behavior is really, really shocking.
Yeah, I mean, they need to do that to commit the genocide for their kind of final solution, arguably. But then surely Palestinians saw what happened to Yugoslavia in 1999. They'd seen what had happened in Nicaragua and Central America. They'd seen what they've been doing to Africa Congo DRC, in Sudan. Why did the Palestinians continue to negotiate and see the United States and European countries as anything other than co-belligerents against them, and realize that only Beijing and Moscow were the routes to their salvation, their possible salvation?
Look, those who negotiated, continued to negotiate with Israel is not all the Palestinians, not us for sure. We discovered from the very beginning that it was false. And we discovered that there were two illusions that the Palestinian Authority believed in. The first illusion was that Israel and the Zionist movement is ready for a compromise. That was an illusion that is gone now. The other illusion was that the United States of America can be a mediator between us and Israel. Again, this is another illusion that evaporated. And now the question is how we can get ourselves unified. And that's why we were in Moscow. That's why we were in Beijing. I personally drafted the agreement that all Palestinian parties signed in Beijing that spoke about the formation of a national consensus government, creation of a unified Palestinian leadership to encounter these two big risks, the risk of ethnic cleansing and the risk of annexation of the West Bank. But unfortunately, the Palestinian Authority still insists not to start the implementation of these two agreements, which are very essential, in my opinion. And we have no other alternative but to get unified in front of the risks we are facing today.
Dr. Barghouti, I'll stop you there. More from the General Secretary and co-founder of the Palestinian National Initiative and member of the Palestinian Legislative Council after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with a member of the Palestinian Legislative Council, Dr. Mustafa Barghouti. Dr. Barghouti, you were talking about hopes of new interlocutors in Beijing or in Moscow. I've got to get onto the media because some people watching this, they'll recognize your face even if they don't normally get to see much about Gaza. It's been a week where there's been a mass killing and kidnapping of Red Crescent, Red Cross workers, 14 or so, in Rafah. And the BBC, the British state media mouthpiece, has called it alleged killing, I understand. So has not sure which massive conglomerate owns Sky News, they keep changing hands, also saying it's somehow alleged, even though it's the Red Cross, the UN-affiliated organisation, saying it. What have you thought about how successfully the media has played its part in NATO countries in aiding genocide, aiding the Holocaust of our times?
So shameful. And one day the BBC itself will be accused of committing war crimes by covering up these acts that Israel is doing. Not only them, but in general, so many media outlets keep repeating the Israeli narrative. And even when you tell them the truth, when they interview you, they keep coming back at you with the Israeli narrative, as if they represent Israel, you know, something we've been used to. But the story of what you have just said, the story about what you have just said is important. We're talking about 15 first aid medical workers who work for the Palestinian Red Crescent, which is affiliated with the Red Cross, and another number of civil defense people who all were gathered to come and help responding to a call of injured people. They went to that site, which was not classified as an area where military operations are happening. It was classified as a safe area. So they went to save an injured person, and the first ambulance was attacked by the Israeli army. And then the second ambulance came, and it seems that these people in these ambulances, we're talking about 15 and no less than 4 ambulances probably, they were forced out of their ambulances, handcuffed, and then at pinpoint, shot to death, getting bullets in their heads, in their chests. They were field executed. Health professionals, medical people. And that makes the number of Palestinian doctors and nurses who were killed by the Israeli army more than 350 up till now. Add to that the fact that they have killed already 209 Palestinian journalists. They don't allow a single foreign journalist to enter Gaza, and then they shoot and kill Palestinian journalists. Doesn't matter whom these people work for. One of the last ones that were shot worked for the ABC, the American news agency. So we are talking here about a total feeling of impunity on the Israeli side, that they can do anything. They can commit any crime. They can kill any person. Even if it's a doctor, if it's a medical doctor, they are violating every international law. And let's not forget that Netanyahu himself is accused of war crimes, and the International Criminal Court wants to have him, to put him in the court. And yet you have a country like Hungary saying they will receive him and they will not hand him over. According to the agreement they have signed with the ICC, they will just protect him. This is the level of violation of international law that
Yeah, but you see, isn't this the problem for Palestinians? They keep talking about the ICC. The ICC is seen as a colonial court by the global south. And yet the Palestinians Vladimir Putin, there's an arrest warrant out for him. I mean, no one takes the ICC seriously. And yet I always hear Palestinian figures talking about it.
We do, and I tell you why. We do, and I tell you why. Actually, we should be thanked. I think President Putin should thank Palestinians for doing what we've done, because we've exposed this international system. We've exposed them. And as you said, maybe as one of the, I think it's one of the American politicians who said it, the ICC was designed for countries like Russia, for African countries, but not for Western governments. And the fact that we managed to drag Netanyahu into that court, or the case of Netanyahu to that court, was very important in exposing the reality that a country, some European countries who would say they would hand over Vladimir Putin to the ICC, but they wouldn't do the same to Netanyahu. We have managed to, and also on the issue of Ukraine, all the punitive acts against Russia, the sanctions, the thousands of sanctions that were imposed, 11,000 sanctions were imposed on Russia in the second month of the war in Ukraine, and none on Israel, which is occupying us since 57 years and displacing us since 77 years. In my opinion, Gaza and Palestinians have provided great service to the whole world by exposing the level of double standard that the Western governments are following.
Yeah, well, Karim Khan, the head of the ICC, he's been on this show. We invite him back on. He wasn't that impressive. I understand there are some allegations he denies of a personal nature against him since that ICC judgment on Netanyahu was being made. I mean, arguably, it's only liberal elites who gave a damn about this. People who went to universities, people who went to posh schools that cared about international law, international humanitarian law. People know there's a class war going on in these Western European countries where inequality has risen to appalling rates that one could judge to be, I don't know, in a way nearing the scale of misery and killing as in Gaza, arguably. I think another thing people in Palestine don't seem to understand, and maybe you can tell me, is how involved the populations of Western Europe are in with the genocide. They have pension plans which are invested in companies, their own job places, the trade unions they work at. They invest in and the best investments, even better since October the 7th, are Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, Northrop, Boeing, General Dynamics, British Aerospace, BAE Systems. Why do the Palestinians think the people of Western Europe or the United States, who are making money out of this, the masses, are going to put enough pressure on their governments when NATO countries are based, according to some in the Global South, their whole raison d'etre, everything about NATO countries are the idea of imperialism, colonialism, and mass murder?
Sure. I don't disagree with you, but that's why we are exercising every possible effort to enhance the widest possible boycott, divestment, sanctions campaign against Israel. And we want not only Western governments to do that, we want also.
But they're
Russia
not going to,
do
they don't care. I think it's the appeal that
some do. Actually,
Ireland and Spain, maybe.
And some have cut their military cooperation with Israel. We will not feel hopeless. We have to keep our hope, and that's why we are continuing to work. For me, the most important thing is how can we stop this terrible genocide as soon as possible, and how can we stop and fail this plan, terrible plan of ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people. For that, we will do everything we can. But you are right. You are right. There is a very huge moral problem, not only for Western governments, but also for Western citizens who keep silent about this crime that is happening, or who show no interest even in trying to know what's going on.
Arguably, their lives are so miserable because of the economic inequalities in their own countries, they don't have time to think about the children dying in Gaza, some might say. Of course, by the time this interview goes out, Trump might have already launched a war. He's restarting Biden-Obama wars all over the place, whether he does start one on Iran. The United Arab Emirates, where I'm speaking to you from, already saying they won't allow the United States to use their U.S. base in Abu Dhabi for an attack. What will that mean for Palestine if there's an attack on Iran, which, in fairness, hasn't... I mean, I don't know. What do you think? Do you think Iran has really done much, done enough to help the people of Palestine? They seem awfully quiet.
Well, they did... they're better than others who are standing with Israel, definitely, and they're better than others who are doing nothing. But, of course, the risk of a war on Iran is there. That's exactly what Netanyahu wants. Netanyahu has been dragging Trump in his direction. He tried to push Biden to do it before. And it is really ironic that Trump, who came to power only 2 months ago, claiming that he's a man of peace and that he will stop the wars everywhere, and actually, he didn't hide his intention of getting Nobel Peace Prize. And now you see him dragged by Netanyahu, or actually by himself, I don't know, into these terrible military actions. If they attack Iran, this will be a huge disaster for everybody. It will be a huge disaster for the region. It will be a huge disaster for the world's economy. It will be a huge disaster for everybody. But at the same time, it shows you what are the real intentions of a person like Netanyahu and his fascist government. He is dreaming of himself as the new imperial leader that would control the whole Middle East. That's the level of chauvinist kind of ideas he has in his mind. And that's the level of his megalomania.
And he controls Trump, is your...
Well, it seems he can. Contention. I mean, it seems he can, because look at Trump now. It's not just Trump. It's the whole crowd around Trump is Zionist and totally supportive of Israel. And that's why you see this zigzag in the policy of Trump. From the first hand, from one side, he has forced Netanyahu to accept ceasefire temporarily. And now he is supporting the violations of every ceasefire by Netanyahu. So it's totally unpredictable. But at the end of the day, I think this will lead to disasters to everybody, including the United States of America.
Dr. Mustafa Barghouti, thank you.
Thank you.
That's it for the show. Our condolences to the bereaved in this region because of the continuing Gaza genocide. We'll be back on Monday with a friend of John Lennon who helped to write Imagine. On Monday, we'll be with novelist, playwright, historian, filmmaker, journalist and street fighter Tariq Ali, a lifelong fighter for Palestinian rights. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media. If it's not censored in your country, head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.